Thank you. Welcome.
Hare Krishna.
Jai Sitaram. Wednesday was the appearance day of our Lord, Sri Ram, Ramachandra, Ram Navami. Ram is one of the major incarnations of Vishnu. This talk I've entitled Lord Ram, Human Heart, Divine Destiny. Which is a strange title, isn't it, for an avatar? Human Heart. Okay. The story of Ram juxtaposes human desire on the one hand and divine destiny on the other. It solves this dilemma by showing us how to live a spiritually fulfilled life in accordance with Dharma. Dharma, as we know, is a big word. It's a big word. It encompasses many things, many aspects of life. It's not simple and straightforward. But the fundamental understanding of Dharma is purpose and meaning. Life must have a purpose. We are not here by accident, my friends. It does not all come to naught. It isn't a nihilistic existence. It has meaning. And the more you connect to that through your spiritual practice, the greater the meaning becomes, the more it has an impact on your own life, subjectively, and the more it brings value to everyone else around us. We're here to fulfill ourselves and to make a contribution to the world around us. We call that the win-win situation. So, we take to the path of responsible conduct or Dharma Marga. So, how many here are familiar with the story of the Ramayana? How many are not? Okay, there's a half a dozen or so that are not. I'm not going to read the whole story or narrate the story because it's long. I would recommend, you know, you could even get on probably onto Wikipedia and get a version of it. You know, just a shortened version if you're interested. But I just want to highlight some of the themes today that are there in the Ramayana. So essentially one of the basic themes of the Ramayana is enlightened civilization or dharmic civilization versus law of the jungle. Here we have rules, regulations, we have guidelines and stipulations. We can live in what we call the civilized society, where the weak or the less than strong are protected. As opposed to the law of the jungle, where only the strong win out. The strong overpower the weak. All you have to be is stronger in the jungle, so to speak. That can also be the law of the ghetto in some places, for example. So we have enlightened civilization on the one hand to establish Dharma as the supreme code or ethos of life. On the other hand, we have the law of the jungle, which, as I say, establishes the power of the strong over the weak. So, Lord Ram appeared as an incarnation on planet Earth in Treta Yuga. Treta Yuga is the Silver Age of the Four Ages, Second Age, or Epoch. When was that? About 2 million years ago. 2 million years ago. That will confound all of you scientists out there, but the proofs are there. There are even satellite photos that prove that this happened. The Ramayana is the book or the document that explains the life of Ram. Rama Ayana, the life of Ram. The most famous Ramayana is the one by Valmiki, written in Sanskrita, in the Sanskrit language. Then we have Tulsidas's version. Tulsidas is in Hindi, no?
Yes.
It's not in Sanskrit. Hindi.
Ramacharitamanas, so it's Hindi.
Yeah. And then we also have Malayalam versions, we have Marathi versions, we have Tamil versions in all the different dialects, I'm sure. But the one that we are more or less adhering to is Valmiki's Ramayana, which is the one that Prabhupada has given us. It's the Sanskrit version. So the Vedas are divided into different categories. The Vedas themselves are the Sama, the Rig, the Yajur, the Atharva Veda. Then we have the Upanishads, we have Vedanta Sutra, then we have the 18 Puranas, and the Upa Puranas, the lesser Puranas. Then, separate to all that, if you think the Vedas are voluminous, you are correct. You could probably study your entire life and not cover all of the Vedas. The Ramayana and the Mahabharata, which of those categories do they fall into? They don't. They have a separate category. They're called Itihasa, which is histories. The histories. So separate category entirely. Now, when incarnations of God appear on earth, avatars, especially the major ones, they all take birth in one of the planetary dynasties. One of the dynasties that come through a planetary dynastic line. It's a fact. So, famously, Lord Ram appears in what planetary dynasty?
Raghu.
The Raghu dynasty, that's the name of the dynasty, but what's the planetary name? The solar dynasty, the sun dynasty. He takes birth through that dynasty. When Krishna comes, Krishna takes birth in what dynasty? The Chandravamsa. What is it? Moon. Moon dynasty. He's the romantic guy, isn't he? See, he's the moon guy. Ram's the sun guy. He's about monarchy and rulership and sovereignty. Buddha is considered to be an incarnation, and as I've said in the past, more in the north of India than in the south. But he's there in the Vedas, he's predicted. So, what planetary dynasty does Buddha take birth in or through? What planet has the same name as Buddha?
Mercury.
Mercury, the planet, is B-U-D-H-A, and Buddha, the avatar, is normally spelled B-U-D-D-H-A. And Mercury is the planet of intellectuality, of discretion, of discrimination, of nyaya, philosophical thought, argument, polemics. This is Mercury. So Buddhist philosophy is a very intellectual, erudite type of approach, is it not? Very, very detailed meditations that they go into and go through. For those of you who have had some exposure to Buddhism, which is quite popular. Our favorite, my favorite, Nrsingadev, half man, half lion. You don't want to mess with this guy. Srinagadev. If he's there to protect, and you're the guy that's in trouble. So Nrsingadev, what dynasty? What's the warrior planet?
Mars.
There we go. Mongol. Takes birth through the Mars dynasty. Thought you might be interested in this. Jupiter. I'm backwards there. Okay, forget that one. Let's go on to Parashuram. Parashuram, who eliminated 21 generations of corrupt kshatriyas, corrupt rulers on the planet. Maybe we should just invoke them now and have them come back and sort out a few things for us. What do you reckon? I think that'd be a good idea. So Parashuram, Parashu means?
Axe.
Axe, chopper. So what dynasty did he appear in, surprisingly? Venus. Mm-hmm. So Venus's Sanskrit name is Shukra or Bhargava. Both Parashuram and Venus are descendants of Bhrigu, Rishi, Bhrigu Muni. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, of sages I am Bhrigu. And then Kurma appeared through what planetary dynasty? Saturn, Shani. Vamana, dwarf Brahman, appeared through Guru, Jupiter. Varaha, the boar, through Rahu. Mm-hmm. And Matsya, the fish, through Ketu. We've covered them. Okay. So Ram appeared in Ayodhya some 2 million years ago, which is 500 miles northeast of Delhi. Of all of the various avatars that have appeared, including Krishna, well, Krishna's become very, very popular over the last 30 years due to our Guru Maharaj, our founder Acharya, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He has popularized and made most of the world aware that Krishna exists. But when you go to Asia, you will find Ram iconography, Ram Leela, Ram everything in many, many countries. And those of you that go to these countries to visit and look at all the beautiful temples and the art, etc., you will find Ram Leela. Where? Well, India, obviously. Malaysia, Vietnam, Cambodia, Bhutan, Indonesia, China, Japan, Nepal, Sri Lanka, and probably a few more.
Laos.
There you go.
Bali.
Yeah, Bali, Indonesia. Okay. The Ramayana has two primary themes. Number one, the effective enlightened monarchy or leadership in accordance with Dharma. Number two, the theme of the love story and its dual manifestation of light and dark. So we'll explain that. So King Dashrath had a wife. King Dashrath was king of Ayodhya. So it's in the north part of India. And he had a wife, Kausalya. And he was getting on in years. He was trying to produce a son to be the heir apparent to the dynasty. But it wasn't working. He couldn't produce a son. The two of them did not. So then he decided he'd take another wife, which of course was done in those days, as it's done in certain parts of the world still. So then he went to the kingdom of Kekaya, and he took Kaikeyi as his next wife, who actually turned out to be his favorite. She was a real warrior princess, Kaikeyi, you know. She was a spirited woman. And it didn't work. Still, no heir was produced, neither male nor female. So then his time is going by, he's getting a little more desperate, and he takes the third wife, which is Sumitra, for the same reason, and still, no heir is produced. So there, in this desperate situation, a sage, they called on a sage, I think Rishyashringa. They did a very elaborate sacred fire ceremony, a yajna, Agnihotra. And back in those days, not so much now, there was actually a being that came out of the sacred fire with a pot of nectar or some kind of substance. And this was given to Dasharath, and he was told to give that to his wife, and a son would be produced. So he did that, and there she sits with the pot of nectar, and there's the other two queens. What about us? Well, these queens got along quite well, apparently. So there's different explanations. Ramayana, you'll have, you know, variant explanations, or you know, how things went, and sometimes they're a bit different in various versions. Anyway, so she gave Kaushalya, divided hers in half and gave it to Kaikeyi. And then Sumitra didn't have anything, so she still felt badly. So they each divided theirs in half and gave her those. So that's how it was. And all queens became pregnant. So with the intercession of the king, of course. And everybody was quite happy. Ram was born. He was the oldest. He was the son of Kaushalya, the principal queen. He was born. Later that day, Bharata was born. And he was the son of Kaikeyi, the warrior princess. And 2 days later, apparently, Lakshman and Shatrughna, the twins, were born to Sumitra. Four boys. So everyone is quite happy about that. And then they began their instruction, etc. Now, another, we'll get back to that as we go. One of the interesting themes of the Ramayana is this. Well, maybe I should mention this now. Ram was 100% Vishnu Tattva. I'm sorry, 50% Vishnu Tattva. 50% God energy. And 50% human. That's why I called this human heart, divine destiny. Bharat was 25% Vishnu Tattva, God energy. And then the two twins were 16% each of Vishnu Tattva, of God energy. The rest, human. So there's an interesting juxtaposition between Krishna and Ram in this sense. Krishna is 100% Godhead. There's no human mixed in there for good measure. So it never bothered Krishna to be attacked by so many demons, and what he had to do to dispense with the demons, which he was attacked by a lot. It never bothered him when he was separated from his birth parents at birth. Then at age 16, he was separated from his foster parents, Yashoda and Nanda. That didn't bother him either. Then he was separated also at 16 from the love of his life, Radha. And that didn't seem to bother him either. Now, if you're a human, my friends, these things will bother you. They can have some sort of impact, generally a pretty significant impact on the average human. Any one of those things. But not with Krishna. Ram followed all the rules, but he was emotionally conflicted at various times, which shows up through the course of the story. So you have a wonderful conflict going on within Ram of the divine side, who has to follow his destiny and his duty, and he has all these powers that God has, but he's afflicted by human emotion in some of the choices that he's forced to make and some of the circumstances that he's faced with. This is not easy for him. So it might be that that's why he's such a popular figure with the people even today, because he goes through a lot of the things that we go through. Whereas Krishna just breezes through it all. You know, we can relate to Krishna in some ways, but with Ram, we can relate to the human foibles, the human weaknesses, and the human experiences that he goes through as well. So it brings him very close to the people. That's why they love him. So, Ram always followed the rules. And if he didn't follow the rules, or if he was conflicted about the rules, he went through a lot of angst about it. So following the rules was paramount for him, because he was upholding Dharma. That's what he's all about. Whereas Krishna broke all the rules. Krishna didn't care for rules. Krishna upheld Dharma as well, but he didn't sweat the rules too much. He bent them, broke them, rearranged them. He did whatever he had to do. And that's him riding off in the chariot there. You know, he's off. He's out of here. So they're very different in this sense. It also shows you, you know, the Godhead doesn't want to do the same thing every day. Huh? Do you want to do the same thing every day? I don't think so. You need variety. Because variety is the spice of life, correct? So the Godhead needs that in his various incarnations. So I think that's pretty interesting, that juxtaposition. Okay. So the theme of the love story, let's look at this for a minute. Sita and Ram. Divine energy or the presence of God exists in love that is not opposed to Dharma. Krishna bent the rules of Dharma for his relationship to Radha. But with Ram, it was Sita from the day he met her until the end. It was Sita, Sita, and only Sita. Even though he ends up in some real difficult circumstances, still his love, his attachment, his loyalty towards Sita is unswerving. The deep abiding love goes beyond the physical as well as the current individuality in this life and connects with the soul of the beloved. This is the love of Sita and Ram. Where did Sita come from? Was she conceived in the traditional manner? No. Dasharath was performing a very elaborate sacrifice. And when we say sacrifice, we mean they're choosing a huge plot of land, they're plowing this land, they're getting all the debris off the land, and they're going to establish the sacred mandala, the sacrificial mandala, or the yajñapit. And that's where they're going to have a sacrifice. This may go on for days, it may go on for months, depending. And a lot of paraphernalia is needed. A lot of priests come. There's a lot of chanting going on. There's a lot of offerings that are made into the fire. It's very elaborate. So Dasharath one day was plowing the field with a gold plow. You know, symbolically, he was for the sacrifice. And in the furrow of the plow, a baby girl appeared. There she was. Was this any baby girl? Oh no. This was the goddess of fortune herself. And picked her up. Did I say Dasharath?
Yes.
I'm sorry, my mistake. Janaka. Correct me when I do that, please. It was King Janaka. That's her father. So Janaka was plowing the field. There's Sita. And who's her mother?
Mother Earth.
Mother Earth. Bhumi Devi. That's her mother. And Janaka became her father. And Sita means? What's the word Sita mean? Furrow. That's where she came from. So, how does this apply, the relationship between Ram and Sita apply to a relationship we may have as humans in this lifetime? I've touched on this before, I believe, when I've spoken. Man wants a woman. We're wired that way. A woman wants a man. Because a woman's got all of the requirements, including the physiological requirements, for example. Some people, that's all they want. They just want to make sure she's got the right gender. That's good enough. They don't recognize her beyond that. You have gender consideration. The next level is individuality. Well, who is this person inside the body? Yeah, she happens to be a woman. Maybe she's Irish. Maybe she's Indian. Maybe she's Portuguese. Whatever. But who's the person inside? What is this person doing in this life? What is her purpose in this life? How does she want to realize herself and her potential? That's the next level. Then yet there's another level, which is the spiritual level. This is a soul on a journey, just like you. And if we're going to go into relationship, then our duty is also to be concerned about this soul's development and evolution during the course of that journey. So you're looking at this woman who you call your wife or your girlfriend on three levels. On the physiological, on the identity level or the personal, and on the spiritual level. So this we had with, obviously, with Ram and Sita. That's a little bit beyond that because it's the Godhead and the Vishnu Shakti, the energy of the Godhead. Okay, there's a whole thing that went on. They discovered, they were brought by Vishvamitra, a very famous and powerful sage, to the court of Janaka, because Sita was, it was time to get her a husband. She was the oldest. She had a sister, and then she had two cousins, and then the four boys showed up. Somehow they organized it all, and they married. They all married into the family. At the age of 16. They were 16 when they married. Years passed. At 27, Rom had become, of course, he was the oldest, so he was the heir apparent. He'd become very, very popular, well loved. He'd all been already, he and Lakshman, who was his, Lakshman would never leave his side. He's one of the twins. When Lakshman was a baby, if they didn't lie him down next to Ram, he would cry. And he would continue to cry until they put him next to Ram. Then he'd be quiet. And he spent his whole life connected to Ram. This is your Krishna Balaram. Okay, so at 27, it was time to for the coronation. years earlier, Dasharatha was in a particular battle, Ram's father, and he had been struck down. I think the charioteer, his charioteer had been killed, and he was laying very badly wounded on his chariot. And Kaikeyi, I don't know, Kaikeyi, the warrior woman, she was close to the battle. She was somewhere real close to the battlefield. She rushed onto the battlefield, as women typically do, not usually, but women like her do. That's why you got to love them. And she took the reins of the chariot, and she removed Dasharatha from the field of battle and tended to his wound so that he would recover. Had she not done that, who knows? You know, we may have lost him. So, in effect, he owed her his life. And he said, I will give you two boons. No, he said, yeah, I think he said two right at the beginning. Not one. Usually, I'll give you one. Whatever your heart's desire, tell me. He said two. She says, oh, well, you don't have to give me anything. You know, I love you, and that's why I did it. And she says, no. I will give you whatever you want. I am the king. I can give. She says, well, not right now, my lord. You know, let's just get you well, and we'll worry about that another time. Now, those are famous words, aren't they? Those are words that might come back to haunt you. Which they did. So, Ram was being crowned. Everybody was happy. I mean, everybody was happy. All the queens were happy. All of Ayodhya, the people of Ayodhya loved Ram. They'd already been trained in Kshatriya warrior craft, if you will. So they could do all that. They were, and also in Raja Dharma, in how to be a king, how to govern, all the things you need to know, which nowadays you don't know any politicians that are trained in that way, unless you want to tell me you know one, but I pretty much guarantee you don't. So then Kaikeyi had a maidservant named Mantara. And she was a hunchback. And Mantara approached Kaikeyi. Kaikeyi, what are you doing? They're going to crown Ram tomorrow and you're doing nothing. You're sitting there fixing your hair. What is wrong with you? Well, what are you talking about? We're all happy. The whole city is happy. The kingdom is happy. It's wonderful. This is what we've been waiting for. Yes. And you notice that your son Bharata is not here right now? He's visiting his father in another kingdom? What's that all about? Your son Bharata should be on that throne, not Ram. And so it goes back and forth, and Kaikeyi is arguing against it. No, it's fine the way it is. That's the way it's supposed to be. Anyway, Mantara poisons her mind. And says that it's all a conspiracy against her, and what's going to happen to her? She's going to be driven out. She will no longer be a favored queen once Rama is king, and all these terrible things are going to happen, according to mantra. What does the word mantra mean? The stir. Is it?
It's that same word in French, Latin.
Mantra?
Mantira.
Oh, okay. There you go. Well, I think in Sanskrit it means stir, which is not far off the mark. So she's stirring. And finally, Kaikeyi says she's sort of won her over, and Kaikeyi is in bits. She's crying, and oh my God, what's going to happen? And she says, well, it's a simple solution here. Do you not see it? Are you blind? Are your eyes full of tears? What is it? You have two boons that Dashrath gave you on the battlefield. You've never used them. Now is the time. Ask for these favors. She said, well, what do you want me to ask you? You say, number one, that Ram will not be king. Your son, Bharat, he will be crowned king of Ayodhya. Well, she turned to her. She said, okay. But that's not enough. That's not enough. Because if Ram remains here, he's going to cause trouble. We can't have him here. What do you mean we can't have him here? He lives here. Oh, no, we got to get rid of him. You send him into exile. Into exile? Yes. Live in the forest like a renunciate for 14 years. Really? Yeah. That's what you have to do. Well, sure enough, she went forward. She played it out in full drama mode to her husband, Dashrath. Dashrath could do nothing because he was upholding Dharma. If a Kshatriya, a warrior, a king, a prince, such a person gives their word, they cannot take back their word. They cannot withdraw. Otherwise, it is they're breaking Dharma. So he was torn apart by this news, and he reluctantly agreed to it. He summoned Ram. Ram came in, and Dashrath told him, you won't be crowned. Bharat will be crowned. That is what Kaikeyi has asked. Ram said, okay. If that is your wish, Father, then that is what I'll do. Well, there's more to it. You are to be banished to the forest in exile for 14 years. Okay. If that's what you want, I will do it. Could you imagine telling your father that? If he told you that? Most of us. So off he went. He took off his royal robes. They put on bark back in the days. I'm not sure what kind of bark it was, but that's what they put on. Bark. Lakshman wasn't letting him go without him because he was his closest brother. And he says, I'm going. I will protect you. It'll be my job to protect you wherever you go. And Sita, who was now with him and he had married, she says, I am not going to remain here without you. You came to get me. Here I am. I'm going with you too. And he tried to argue and explain that, this will be too difficult, and it'll be very austere living, and we'll just be roaming through the forests, and it'll be dangerous, and who knows where the food will be, etc. She said, I'm going, Lord. I'm going with you. So it was the three of them that went. So Lakshman also took off his princely finery and wore simple bark, some kind of clothing. But Sita did not. She was going to forego all of her jewels and her princess accoutrements. And she was told, no, you cannot do this. You have to always keep your jewels and your whole attire, your royal attire. It is like Parvati versus Kali. You cannot be turn into a wild woman of the jungle. You must remain the refined, beautiful woman, and you take all this with you. Otherwise, we stand the risk of you losing your essence. So it went. So that's what happened. She kept all of her her clothing and her jewelry. So, why, you may ask, was Bharata crowned king rather than Ram? Well, there's many reasons, but simply, what was the purpose? To demonstrate two of God's divine opulences, Ram's divine opulences. What are they? Vairagya and Virya. Vairagya is renunciation, detachment, the ability to let go of anything and anyone and any circumstance. What is the hardest thing we as humans find to do? To let go. You all have the stories. Different for all of us, similar in some ways, to let go. When something has come to an end, this has taken an abrupt left turn that I didn't see coming. Right, he didn't see it coming, supposedly. And that's especially difficult to deal with because you haven't had time for your mind to get used to the idea. You know, sometimes you can get used to an idea and then gradually you say, okay, I think I can do this now. I couldn't last week, you know. No. So, Vairagya, detachment. Of the six opulences of the Godhead, Vairagya, or detachment, is one of them. As humans, we don't think about that. We don't really put much credence into the ability to detach and walk away from something. And at the same time, we could argue that, isn't it marvelous how everything in the world, if you watch nature, if you watch human behavior, if you look at history, anything you look at has three states: a beginning, a middle, and an end. Srishti, Stiti, Pralaya. Everything does. Everything comes to an end. It's just a question of when. Sometimes you say, well, I'm glad that's over, right? Sometimes you say, oh, I don't want this to end, right? And sometimes just ripped right out of your hands. So, isn't it amazing how we seem to think that certain things won't end? It's complete illusion to which we are subject. Because everything ends. No one gets out of here alive, my friends. So, Vairagya and Virya. What's the purpose of the incarnation? Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chidushkritam. The avatar comes to destroy the demons, the dark forces, those which cause disruption, for the benefit of the sadhus, of the good people, of the people following Dharma, of the devotees, of his followers, of the people who are devoted to God, devout, and without his being sent to the forest, this part of his lila, or his pastime, would not have been played out. Right? So, when Sita told Ram she's going to go with him to the forest, he says, no, you cannot go. And her statement was, I must go with you even if it's to hell. That's what she told him. I will be with you. So we have Ram and Sita, and then we have our friend Ravan and Sita. Ram and Sita, their love, their relationship is light. It's beauty. It's spiritual. It's dharmic. But then Ravan comes into the picture. So, while they were in the forest, along came Sharpanakha. Back in those days, there were a lot of Rakshasas, or major demons. I mean, they were shapeshifters. They could fly through the air. They had various kinds of mystic powers. You know, this wasn't your average dictator like we have nowadays. This is something else. And Ravan had done a lot of austerities. Ravan is the antagonist of the story. He's a very powerful person who was on the throne in Lanka, Sri Lanka. And he was also very learned, and he was very, very attractive, and he was very manly. He had a lot of amazing qualities. Anyway, Sharpanakha was his sister, and Ram, Lakshman, and Sita were roaming through the forest as they did, and Sharpanakha came along. Now, she was, you know, an ugly hag, a Rakshasi, but she could transform herself into a very, very beautiful woman that surely these princes would want, undoubtedly. So she approached Ram, because, you know, he was the guy. She went right up to Ram and says, hi, I'm here, you and me, let's go. And Ram said, no, I'm sorry, dear lady, I'm a married man. This is my wife, in fact, she's with me now, and Your amorous affections may be better turned on my brother, Lakshman. Now, he was a married man too, but his wife was absent. So that's what she did. She turned her amorous affections on Lakshman, and he got Lakshman's tolerance, and his patience are very short, very short. Just like Balaram, saying, you know, he does not suffer fools gladly and not for very long. So he threatened her immediately, you know, to get out of here, I'll, you know, do this, that, or the other. Then she went back to Ram and she said, he said, well, you know, please, I'm not interested. So then she decided if she attacked and killed Sita, she'd have Ram to herself. So she went for Sita. Lakshman attacked her, and he cut off her ears, her nose, and her teats. All of them. With a sword. I think it was a sword. She's in bad shape now. And you may say, well, that's not very dharmic. That's not very right. That's true in the sense that They actually had to kill this ogress, this demoness, Tataka, earlier on in the story. Vishvamitra explained to them. Ram says, we don't strike a woman. you never strike a woman. You don't shoot her or cut her, nor do you kill her. And he says, yes, in civilized society that's true, but this, you're in the jungle now. This is where the law of the jungle applies. So that's what they had done with Taraka. They did not kill this demoness, Shripanaka, but they deformed her. Interestingly, Ravana had already killed her husband by accident, supposedly. So she went back to Ravan, her brother, the most so-called the most powerful guy. That's why Ram took birth, is to get rid of this Ravan. And she said, look what's happened to me. These terrible people, they've done this to me. They're kings, but they're dressed in bark. I don't know what they are, and now they've deformed me. You must do something. You must save my reputation or something. And maybe. But then she took a different approach. She said, you know, the most beautiful woman on the planet is there in the forest for the taking. You are the most powerful man on the planet, Ravan. Yet you do not have the most beautiful woman. This guy in the forest and his brother, they have her. Why would they have her? You're the man with the kingdom. You should have her. Well, this was it, you know. And said, Ravan, I must have her. Now, Ravan had a harem beyond anyone else's harem. I mean, he had ladies and ladies and ladies in that harem. Many princesses and various women would just come to him because they were so enamored by him, by his beauty, by his power, apparently by his ability to make love. And he had a reputation. He did not, to his credit, he did not force himself on any of the women. He did not rape. Why would he not, if he's such a demon? Now, you'd think that'd be the first thing he would do. Ravan's father was a sage, Vishrava, who was the son of Pulastya, one of the seven rishis, the Sapta rishis, the seven sages, whose job it is to preserve Vedic tradition. If you look at the Big Dipper in the sky, there's seven stars. That's the seven rishis. That's what they really are, not the Big Dipper. So the seven sages are significant in the universe. They're all sons of Lord Brahma, the creator. So anyway, Vishrava was his father, a very realized sage, who, had sex with a Rakshasi, so a Rakshasa woman, and Ravan was produced. So he was born a Brahmin, yet from a Rakshasa woman, so he was leaning more to the demoniac side, to the Rakshasa side, apparently. So, anyway, Ravan and Sita. So when Ravan heard that Sita was there, he decided, yes, I must have her. I must get her. She must be mine. And so they had to devise a ruse, a device, in order to do that. So he sent Maricha. I guess I am sort of telling you most of the story. He sent Maricha, one of his henchmen, who was also a shapeshifter, to take the form of a golden deer. And when the deer was flitting through the forest, he says, oh my God, oh my, I must have the deer, I must have the deer. I don't know how she wanted that, but she wanted the deer. Ram, get me the deer. Please get me the deer. I've never seen a golden deer before. You sure? Yeah. So off he goes, chasing this deer, flitting through the forest. Tells Lakshmi, you guard Sita. And don't let her out of your sight. And I'll be back. So off he goes. And finally he catches the deer. And the deer turns out to be this demon, Maricha, shapeshifter. Ram shoots an arrow. He's dying. He lays dying, Maricha. And he calls out in Ram's voice. He uses Ram's voice and he goes, Lakshman, help me. Help me. Help. Like this. Well, Ram never called out for help, ever. And he's the Godhead. He doesn't call for help, typically. So he calls for help. So there's Sita and Lakshman back at the ashram. Because Lakshman would always sort of build them a lean-to kind of an ashram from here and there. He's calling out for help. And Sita says, Lakshman, go. Go save your brother. Ram's in trouble. Ram's in trouble. Lakshman's no, he's not. He's not in trouble. Yes, he is. He's calling for you. Lakshman's going, no, you know, he's... That's Ram. He doesn't need me to go help him save him. Yes, he does. Why? Do you just want to be here with me alone? Is that it? Well, that just crushed him. Because Lakshman never looked beyond Sita's ankles. He never once glanced at her. He never once looked at his brother's wife. He only recognized her feet. He was so loyal and did not want to be tempted because she was the most beautiful woman in the world. So he didn't even look at her. He just saw her, sorry, walking around in her feet, and then he looked after her and talked to her, but didn't look at her. So when she accused him of wanting her, he was devastated at that accusation after all he had done, all those years. This is the final year, by the way. They've been in the forest 13 years. This is the 14th year when this happens. You know, always at the 11th hour, right? Gotta be, if you're a good storyteller. So... What does he do? He draws with the edge of his bow, I think it was his bow, a circle around their little ashram. Lakshman Rekha. Rekha is a line. And he draws this line. And that's a mystic circle. As long as she remains in the mystic circle, she is protected. No problem. Nothing can happen to her. Is that true? Oh, yes. Can you draw such a circle around yourself? Oh, yes. Around your loved ones? Oh, yes. Do you need the edge of a bow? Oh, no. You can do it. Can you do it like Lakshman does it on that level? I don't know. I don't think so, but yes, you can put divine protection around persons and circumstances. Of course you can. The mystic bubble. So, off he goes against his will to save Ram, who doesn't need saving. Meantime, Ravan comes, of course, disguised as a Brahmin. Well, you know, in other words, he doesn't have his normal clothes on. Disguised as a Brahmin. Technically, he is a Brahmin. He's disguised as a priest. And he goes, oh, my dear lady, I'm quite hungry. I've been walking in the forest such a long time, and perhaps you can give me some sustenance. There's a little bit of food you have for me. And Yeah. Well, are you not going to offer a Brahmin some hospitality? Oh, well, yeah, I will. One second. I'll go get something for you. So she goes into their little hut, whatever they had, and comes out with a plate of something or other. And he's sitting outside of the mystic circle. And just right outside the line. So she's sort of handing it to him like this. He's, this is how you've learned to serve a personage who comes for your hospitality. This is how you serve. You don't even put the food down in front of me. Is this how you've been taught? No, but I'm offended. I'm offended the way you're treating me. Well, I don't mean to offend you. Please, serve me properly, or I will go. I will leave you. So she steps outside the circle, places the plate in front of her. He grabs her. He's got his Pushpayatra, his flying Vimana, his chariot, which he stole from his brother, by the way. And they fly off into the sky. He's grabbing her, holding her. She's screaming. She's calling out. No one can hear her. She's made a big mistake. She sent Lakshman away and she stepped outside of the mystic circle. Now what? He takes off a bracelet, throws it down to the earth. They're traveling, takes off an earring, throws it down, takes off a necklace, throws that down. She's leaving the trail. That's what she's trying to do. And so one of the themes here with Ravana and Sita is original sin. If you believe in original sin is what? Enviousness. Enviousness toward whom? Toward God. And that's how we get here in the material world. Envy. But toward God. I want what God has. Why should he have it? I should have it. Then you get the story of the fallen angels in the biblical sense, etc., etc., etc. You can go to different traditions. So, Robin's love is opposed to Dharma and is nothing but lust or selfish desire. He just wants her. The result for Robin was what? The total loss of his kingdom. That was the result. All of his sons were killed, and some of his brothers were killed, ultimately, when the showdown came, when the battle came. And ultimately, he lost his life. So then you get the contrast between Rama on the one hand and Ravan on the other. Ram represents Dharma. Ravan represents adharma. Ram is intellect. Ravan is base instinct. Ram is soul, acts out of soul, out of genuine spirit. Ravan out of ego. Ram pursues love, represents love, loves everyone, serves everyone due to his love. He was just absolutely loved by everybody who knew him and met him. And Ravan, power. All control through power. Can you control through power? Oh yes, you can. For a time. What's more powerful? Can you win people over more powerfully or more effectively through love or through power. Through love. Ram represents detachment. Ravana represents attachment. He wouldn't let Sita go. He kept her in his garden. He didn't touch her. He gave her the option of coming to be with him. He did not rape her. He did not debase her. You come and join me when you're ready. So that was the Brahman part of him coming out. So, but he was attached and he wouldn't let her go. And all of his advisors, including his main queen, Mandodari, and Vibhishana, his brother, who was a devotee, everyone advised him, you must let her go. You cannot keep this woman. She's going to bring ruin on the kingdom. Well, Sita, why would Sita bring ruin? Because she's the goddess of fortune. Herself. You cannot necessarily have the goddess of fortune. You certainly can't kidnap her. And no, if she wants to come and live with you, that's a different thing. That's a separate thing. But that's not the case here. It was forced against her will. Ram was the best among men. Ravana the worst among demons. Rama Chatra, Ravana Brahman. When they finally killed Ravana, when Ram killed him with arrows on the battlefield, and he didn't even show up on the battlefield. He waited. All these other battles happened first. And he lost Indrajit, his son, Meghanad. He lost everybody. And finally he shows up on the battlefield and Ram kills him. But he's dying a slow death. He's full of arrows. And Ram said to Lakshman, we should go and ask him to teach us. What are you talking about, Lakshman? Are you nuts? No, he is a very learned soul. It is sure now that he will die. We must go approach him for instruction. Maybe he will tell us something that has value. And Lakshman says, yeah, okay. So he walks up and he stands right beside Ravana's head. He's looking down on his head. Okay, teach me. And Ravana just turns his head and ignores him. Then he walks away. Lakshman walks away. I tried. Ram approaches Ravana. Takes all his weapons off. He sits down at his feet. He looks over at him. You are a great soul. I bear no malice. I bear no ill will. Please, instruct me. You are a Brahman. And then he did. He told him all the bits of wisdom that he knew that he didn't follow. But he told him. Which is a beautiful gesture in the scheme of things. You know, that he could set aside his emotions. You know, when Sita had been kidnapped, he was torn apart and he was yelling out, he was crying out, I'm going to kill myself, I'm going to kill myself. I can't live without Sita, what have I done? This is such a tragedy. This was his human side. Suffering to the greatest extent that he had lost Sita. He hadn't protected her. But now he had put all that aside. And he didn't bear any malice, even after all this destruction that took place. Ravana had 10 heads. Yes, I didn't tell you this. 10 heads, 10 pairs of eyes, 10 sets of arms. Truly a superior man. And what good did all those heads do? Don't we say two heads are better than than one? Does that mean 10 heads are better than two? Look at his choices. He submits to his basest instincts and passions. Okay, I know, I'm too long. I'll cut out all that. Conclusion. almost. Ram is famous for three things in particular. Number one, defeating the demon Ravan. Number two, rescuing Sita. And number three, being a just ruler. It gets a little more complicated than that when they return to Ayodhya and he takes the throne. Notes. This is Lord Ram's birth chart, his Kundali. That's Ram's birth chart. So if you know what that means, then you'll go, oh my goodness, can you believe it? Or you won't if you don't know what it means. If you have an exalted planet, a planet could be exalted in one sign out of 12. You get a 1 in 12 shot of having an exalted planet. That means as it sounds. In Hindi we say uch. That planet is has developed itself to the highest possible extent. You will get all of the benefits that that planet will give you in your life, whatever that planet represents. Okay? Exalted planets are not rare, but most people do not have them. Even one exalted planet could take a person and lift them very high in life, depending how you use it. It's like a tool. You have to use it. Some people use it, some people don't use it. I can show you many charts of humans, my clients, who have up to 3 exalted planets, which is a lot. And they theoretically could pretty much, you know, you look at those charts, you just smile, you go, well, what can you do? What can't you do? You can do anything if you put your mind to it. This is what the chart of a god looks like, an incarnation of God. On the ascendant, we have Cancer with Moon and Jupiter. Jupiter is exalted in Cancer. The moon rules the chart. The moon rules Cancer. It's in its own sign. Second best thing to being exalted is to have a planet in its own sign. This is a Raj Yoga, a combination for kingship and success. This chart also has a Lakshmi Yoga. Lakshmi Yoga, by definition in astrology, means the king among the kings. Well, this one was married to Lakshmi. All right. Exalted Jupiter. Here's Rahu in the third house in Virgo. Exalted Saturn in the fourth house. Exalted Mars in the seventh house. Exalted Venus in the ninth house with K2. So K2 Venus tells us what? If Venus is his spouse, what happened? Tell me. Separation. In a K2 circumstance, she was kidnapped. You know? Sudden, dangerous kind of circumstance. Exalted Venus, exalted Sun in the 10th house, and then Mercury in the 11th. 5 exalted planets. That's what a God's chart looks like. So, I thought I'd just give you a glance at that. Jai Sitaram. Yeah, you stayed awake. I'm impressed. Any questions? Comments?
I was once told that when I was told that the sun is in my hut. I'm not quite sure.
The sun's in your
hut. That is what I was told.
The sun's in your hut.
Yeah. I don't know where that.
What?
Hat.
Hat. Hat. The sun's in your heart.
Hut.
Oh, heart. Oh, I'm sorry.
You know,
sun's in your heart. Maybe it's the fourth house. Maybe it's Cancer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I just wasn't sure.
Well, and that's not typically, we wouldn't use that term to say it, but that's probably what it means.
So did Ravana die just straight after that? And so you know the way when Krishna killed the demons,
yes, Ravana. When you're when you're killed by God, you become liberated.
Yes, so Ravana then.
Yes, but remember when we told the story of Nrsingha Dev? And we talked about the doorkeepers of Vaikuntha, Jai and Vijay. And they were cursed by the four sages, the four Kumaras. So they either had to come down down to the material world for seven lifetimes as devotees, or three lifetimes as demons. Ravan, that's Jai and Vijay. So he's going right back to Vaikuntha to his post at the door. Vaikuntha bouncer. See what happened last time? He's trying to bounce somebody up. Got in trouble.
Yeah, did Robin, did he have any particular teaching? Anything that kind of culminated what he explained? Is it Robin at the end? Did he have a particular message?
Yeah. He did. And I put it up on my Facebook some time ago. I don't have my phone handy, but if I can remember it, the unevolved mind will. No, I can remember it. The unevolved mind always chooses things that are to the detriment of the person. Chooses, makes choices that will weaken the person or cause problems or self-sabotage in the life. Whereas at the same time, shying away from exactly those things or procrastinating exactly in the areas of the things that will allow that person to fulfill his destiny and realize his maximum potential. That's what he said. So the unevolved mind chooses, makes the wrong choices, and creates problems. Goes with the with weakness or the baser instincts, whereas the evolved soul chooses things that are more difficult to attain initially, but are the things that will bring freedom, and freedom in the broadest sense, and fulfillment. Robert.
Oh, thank you, Prabhu. You mentioned abridgments of the Ramayana at the beginning of your talk. I found a very good one, which has actually been read here in the temple programs before, that takes about 45 minutes to read, from Syracuse University. At the Maxwell School of Public Studies has a Southeast Asian Studies department that one of their professors produced an abridged Ramayana, which can be read in about 45 or 50 minutes. So if people search the internet for, Ramayana Maxwell Syracuse, just those three words.
Ramayana Maxwell Syracuse.
It'll turn up those three, the page that has the links to both the short and the long version. The short version takes about 90 seconds to read.
There you go, for you avid readers out there.
The next part of the story, when Peter is back.
Yes.
And the people are so happy that they don't trust her because she was already in Ravana's place.
Should I comment on that?
Yeah.
Not have time to comment on that.
Okay.
It's a pretty deep subject.
Believe it.
Maybe
not 90
seconds.
Because Sita was living in the palace of another man, it was automatically thought by the population that she would have been subjected to his advances. She would have been, what's the term?
Seduced.
Contaminated, whatever you want to say. But she wasn't. So when she was rescued, she was asked to walk through fire. Or did she say she wanted to do that? I think she said that. She would walk through fire to prove that her chastity was intact, which it was. So she had them build a fire. She walked into the fire. And the fire god, Agni, brought her out. He carried her out. And her chastity was intact. So that meant she could return to Ayodhya with Ram, who then took the throne, rightfully so, after 14 years. And off we go. Except the people of Ayodhya didn't necessarily believe that she was, because they didn't see any of that, even though they had heard about it. And then one day, one of the citizens' sons died. And he died a natural death, but he died ahead of his parents, which is, that's bad karma. So if there's any kind of negative karma going on, especially in Ayodhya, because everybody was happy, everything was working perfectly, but this was proof in some minds that Sita, because she wasn't pure, that's what happened. So Ram then banished Sita to the forest, not knowing she was pregnant. That's what he did. That was his next conflict because of that circumstance. Because he, you know, it was the man versus the king. He was loyal to Sita, but he was the king. And this is what the king had to do in terms of Dharma. What he did not know is Sita was pregnant. And then Sita went to live with Valmiki in his ashram, gave birth to two boys, Love and Kush. And then when Ram decided to do the Ashwamedha sacrifice, sent the horse all over to challenge anybody for his sovereignty before they did the sacrifice. And if he didn't agree that he would be the sovereign, he would be the Chakravarti, the great emperor, then you would fight the army that followed the horse. Well, Ram's army followed the horse. And the two boys, they didn't know who these boys were. They defeated the army. They knew, where these guys come from? They're mere boys. And they called Ram. They said, you got to come. These guys, they beat everybody. So then Ram fought them, and they beat Ram as well. How could they beat Ram? He didn't know they were his sons. How could they beat Ram? Because it proves Dharma rested with Sita. She had been wronged. And his whole thing was to protect his wife. And because he abandoned her under the pressure of the population, Dharma left him and went to Sita. And then that's when he discovered the boys were his boys. And he got his due comeuppance. So he said, Sita, please come back. We'll do another fire, and you can walk through the fire so the citizens can see. Enough of fires. Okay, I already walked through one fire. If I have been disloyal to you, no, if I, how did she say it? If I have been loyal to you all of these years, may the earth swallow me up now. And the earth opened, and in she went, and the earth closed, and that was it. She disappeared. Woman triumphant. Ladies. Okay? Sorry.
How are you?
Thank you.